Okay, if you want to turn to page 34 in the Gold Prayer Book or the white page of text in the white binder, and we'll start with three recitations of the Shakyamuni Buddha mantra. Chayata mune mune maha munaye soha. Chayata mune mune maha munaye soha. Chayata mune mune maha munaye soha. And before we start the Medicine Buddha mantra, Karen's going to lead us in a visualization, but first I'm going to help her with her headset.
It feels a little wonky. Oh, okay. So these look over the ears like this.
Oh, okay.
I'll let you get my
spatial, spatial recognition challenges. Okay.
And then we'll get this up and so it's not on your cheek.
So. Okay. Is that in there?
No, here. Oops, and that's way down into your cheek. Oops.
I guess I should have practiced this one. Okay, how's...
This is a comic relief.
How's the volume?
Yeah.
Good? Okay, thank you. So Geshe-la has taught over the years, and I found some notes from his teachings about a year ago about the Medicine Buddha and the Medicine Buddha practice. And so just to draw your attention, the image is that blue Buddha right there. And there's in his right hand, there's a medicinal plant. The left hand is a begging bowl filled with healing nectars, three different types of healing nectars. And so the Medicine Buddha is relied on and used traditionally in healing physical and mental problems. And so it's very powerful practice to hear or recite the Medicine Buddha mantra to eliminate the three poisons of attachment, anger, and ignorance. So if you feel comfortable, you can add a visualization as we say the prayer and recite the mantra. So at the top of the crown, you would visualize Medicine Buddha, and it's a bright blue color. This is what Geshe-la has taught us. And if that's not comfortable for you, imagining the Medicine Buddha, you can just think of a bright blue light at your crown. And the shape of the light doesn't matter. It's just really the color. That's what's mentioned in the text. And so you can set up a little visualization if you feel comfortable with it. You visualize your pets, your family, your loved ones surrounding you. Okay, so just kind of try to get some picture of that. And then before reciting the mantra, you can think, my sickness, friends, family, pets, any bad feelings, your mental pain, include all of that, and all that your family and friends and loved ones may be experiencing as well. And may their obstacles be eliminated. So we recite to eliminate all of that.
So we'll recite the Medicine Buddha stanza and then the mantra seven times. Bhagawan, with equal compassion for all, whose name when merely heard dispels the suffering of the lower realms, dispeller of disease and the three poisons, I prostrate to Medicine Buddha lapis light. Jayata Om Bekanse Bekanse Maha Bekanse Bekanse Raja Samudgate Soha. Jayata Om Bekanse Bekanse Maha Bekanse Bekanse Raja Samudgate Soha. Jayata Om Bekanse Bekanse Maha Bekanse Bekanse Raja Samudgate Soha Deata Om Bekanse Bekanse Maha Bekanse Bekanse Raja Samudgate Soha Deata Om Bekanse Bekanse Maha Bekanse Bekanse Raja Samudgate Soha Deata Om Bekanse Bekanse Maha Bekanse Bekanse Raja Samudgate Soha.
One more, I'm just joking.
Deata Om Bekanse Bekanse Maha Bekanse Bekanse Raja Samudgate Soha.
So now you can imagine or visualize the bright blue light dissolves into your body and it purifies. So the light penetrates like a laser beam. Like snow falling on a warm rock, it melts right away. It burns all the sickness and mental problems for a healthy mind and body. And you become one with the healing power, or the healing power remains in your heart forever.
Okay, now we'll continue with the four immeasurables. let's do this twice in English so we can get the sense of the meaning, and then we'll chant one time in Tibetan. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And then if you'll turn the page at the bottom of page 37 is the Tibetan chanting version. I'll see if I can avoid not choking on this one. Sem chen tam che de wa dang de Chenrezig's mantra 8 times and Green Tara's mantra 7 times. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. Om Tari Tu Tari 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 Tu Re Soha. And now families who want to go with their children to the children's program are invited to go ahead. And you're also welcome to stay with your children here in the Gampa. Cheetos.
Once again, my name is Karen, and I'm a student here. I've been coming to the center about 11 years, and able to receive a lot of different teachings from teachers here and affiliated with the FPMT. And so I'm kind of bringing all that, hopefully bringing some of that wisdom, and then bringing my own experiences of living with illness, being a caregiver. My caregiver experiences are related to my son, who was diagnosed with a developmental difference when he was 5. So I've had a lot of time in, you know, psychologist's office, psychiatrists, social workers, had a lot of interactions with the healthcare system. So I bring some of that experience. And also just listening to other practitioners here. So I consulted with a couple senior students to get their experiences of living with illness. So that's kind of how I'm coming to this topic. It's something I care a lot about, too. And I did just want to acknowledge that we may have people streaming, and I really appreciate you joining this discussion. If they're not able to physically come to the center dealing with fatigue or other issues, the streaming is a great way to participate, so welcome. So just briefly, in this discussion, this is kind of where we're headed. And one more thing. We brought in some more comfortable, supportive chairs. So if anybody is feeling like they need to make that, that's part of how this could be more comfortable for you, please feel free to move around. And we have a lot of cushions and things like that for extra support. So in this discussion, this is kind of where we're headed. I first wanted to just honor and acknowledge the challenges and difficulties of living with illness. And then we're going to apply kind of a Dharma lens and look at illness, strategies for working with our emotions and thoughts. So we're going to, hopefully you're going to walk away with some maybe new things or just be refreshed with some strategies for when difficult emotions arise and we just sort of get spinning in our own orbit and how to kind of shut that down. And then I have some other stuff, and I'm not sure if we'll have time to get to that, but and that's more about communicating with someone who is living with a chronic condition. How can our speech be helpful and not add an additional burden with the way we communicate with people? And then I really want it to end up with, like, the gifts, the silver linings, the growth. So to hear from you about how have you grown from living with illness or being a caregiver. Does that sound, I don't know if we'll get to all that in an hour, but, and this, you know, just to be clear, it's not to replace any kind of care you're receiving from your doctor or some other health providers or to be an alternative to treatment, right? This is just to enhance how you're coping with your illness. So this verse, and some of you are familiar with this verse. I thought it was in the Gold Prayer Book, but it's not, so I ended up putting it here. And it's from the Lama Chopa, which is like an extensive kind of prayer practice where we really try to cultivate a lot of gratitude to our teachers. Is that a fair way to say it? And we also review, like, the whole path. So it's got everything in it. It's a really powerful practice. And so there's this verse. So I'll read it out loud. Even if the environments and beings are filled with the fruits of negative karma and unwished-for sufferings pour down like rain, I seek your blessings to take these miserable conditions as a path by seeing them as causes to exhaust the results of my negative karma. So that's pretty heavy, right? Like, it's like a radical proposition, I think. Like, that I'll take these difficult things happening to me and I'll work with them and use them in my spiritual path. Like, I think it's shocking, really, that that's even possible, right? Because we tend to want to, the miserable conditions, we want to run away, we want to move, we want to deny, you know, we want to do a lot of things to get away from the difficulties. And here, this verse is challenging us, like, you know, bring it on, right? And so it's a really, it's very brave, a brave thing to do, to try to walk that path. And I think I, you know, when I first started exploring different spiritual practices and paths, I kind of thought like I could compartmentalize, like, okay, I'm going to go do that like spiritual thing over here. I'll go to a place, say some words, and then the rest of my life will just keep going as it is. but I think as you go deeper and deeper, you realize, no, I need to, it's not something to compartmentalize. What makes it work is when we really take the teachings on board and really think about them and challenge them and apply them in our lives and then begin to own them so that it emerges as we live our daily life. And so, let's see. So my point here is like everything can be an opportunity for practice, right? The good stuff, the bad stuff, the unwanted, and the hard stuff actually presents the greatest opportunity. And some of these hard things like illness and different health conditions are very unpredictable, unwelcome, disruptive in many aspects of life, uncomfortable, painful, frightening, right? As we realize our death is closer than we think, right? If we're in a really painful, scary episode, and it impacts others. So I guess my question to you, you know, is this possible? Can we turn the miserable conditions into the path? And I don't want to be sacrilegious, but I want to challenge the sentence a little bit. Like, can we turn the miserable into, like, eliminate that adjective? So can we become a little more neutral in our reactions to the ups and downs, right? So we develop a little more equanimity. So now I'm just taking these conditions as a path. Right? So I'm rewriting this ancient text, but that's kind of what emerged for me when I really thought about this verse. So this is kind of a house of cards. So I'm a very visual thinker, so I like to kind of use images. Images evoke a lot for me. So that this house of cards is like when you, you know, get a diagnosis or you have new symptoms, your life can feel very fragile. That, you know, if you just take one card, the whole thing's going to fall down. I just wanted to kind of go over and then hear from you some of the challenges of living with health conditions or chronic conditions. So getting an accurate diagnosis can take years, like over a decade or more for some people. A lot of financial burden, a lot of out-of-pocket expenses, difficulties getting insurance coverage. Many treatments offered up are not effective or not effective for you. And it can be a really up-and-down experience where there can be hope about, well, I'm going to try this new thing. I really think it's going to work for me. And then feeling a lot of despair when the results you wish for didn't happen. If you have, particularly with illness that is sort of invisible, where other people, you might not be able to, they might not know from the outside what you're going through, there can be a lot of insensitive comments from other people, you know, kind of judging how you're living your life. getting unsolicited advice, right? So it's, I receive, okay, I see a lot of nods, right? I mean, people have, they have their own health experiences or their, you know, cousin's brother's wife, that happened to them, and then they have something to share, right? And so that creates this, like, okay, how am I going to respond to this advice that's not really where we're headed? And that happens a lot with when I mean, it still happens to me, like people send me articles that relate to my child's situation. And a lot of them are like horse therapy. So I mean, that's like horses are magic. So I don't know why a lot of people connect with that, but I do seem to get a lot of advice about using animals and horses in therapeutic ways. But some of the things that came up were like, you should just drink celery juice or just drink more coffee or, you know, you need to sleep more. And these are not things that were said to me, but, you know, as I was preparing for this. So the second point is having the energy to do the things you need to do or want to do in a given day. So a chronic condition really impacts your sort of bandwidth for what you can do in a day. And I wondered if anybody has heard about the spoon theory. And if anyone, so Jim Barnes, he's a member that he had polio as a child and then post-polio syndrome as an adult. And he's the one that really taught me about spoon theory. And so I wondered if anybody wanted to explain that. Oh, wonderful. So wait, hold on, Miranda. So this is not a Dharma thing, okay? This, but it's a super helpful idea.
So the spoon theory relates to people with chronic illness, specifically pain or fatigue. And it's saying that, you know, you have a certain amount of spoons every day that you can use doing various things. And something that an able-bodied person might not see as something that would take up a spoon could for someone with disabilities. Or so, like, for an example, as an example, I think a lot of people know that I have chronic pain issues. So I would say, like, you know, getting up and walking upstairs is like two spoons, you know? Mm-hmm. And it differs person to person. Like, for some people, it might be like they have anxiety and making a phone call is a spoon, and then they're, you know, done for the day. So it kind of shows when people need to take a break, and it's a way of kind of expressing the situation that the individual person is in.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of forethought that goes into planning the day. Right, if you know you have this many spoons for the day, how you make choices throughout the day you have to be really mindful of that. And then you can, if you do too much in one day, you might borrow against the next day, and that can set off even more, you know, symptoms and health-related problems. So there's a lot of, a lot of waiting involved, too. Right, waiting to find a specialist. Okay, I'm seeing a nod over here. Waiting, you know, for test results. Waiting for the effects of a treatment to take effect. Waiting to see, is my condition stabilized or am I getting worse? Right, where is this headed? So there's just a lot of churn, right? Is that, I'm seeing some nodding. I'm hoping I'm capturing this. A lot of churn and a lot of ups and a lot of emotional swings up and down. And, of course, it affects everything. Your ability to stay in school, to work full-time, to, you know, financially, it's incredibly impactful, the ability to support oneself and one's family. It impacts, health can impact relationships. If we're not able to engage socially with our friends because we're, you know, not able to go out in the evenings because we need a rest, or not able to play with our kids the way we want to play with our kids. And so this can significantly impact overall quality of life. So that's the hard stuff. Hopefully that's the hardest we go in this talk, but I really just wanted to acknowledge and honor the experiences. And so these are the, like, these are the word Geshe-la uses instead of suffering is complications, right? These are the complications of our everyday life. And these are the kind of sufferings that the Buddha talked about when he taught the Four Noble Truths. And so the first level in the First Noble Truth that he talked about was the this obvious physical and mental pain or discomfort, right? So that was 25 years ago. This was what he was observing and telling us about, and it has continued, right? And the second level is a more subtle level, the suffering of change, right? This changeable suffering that we believe something's happiness, but then when it ends, we realize it was just a temporal feeling. It wasn't like an ultimate happiness. It changed. And that thing becomes ultimately unfulfilling or frustrating because it doesn't last. And then the third one, just this is the most subtle level of suffering, which I'm not going to really address today, but I would imagine Venerable Rabina will do a great treatment of this compounded pervasive suffering. So that's kind of our existential condition of having a body and mind. And it's produced and controlled by afflictions, like these negative states of mind and our past karma, and we're stuck in this cycling. So I will hold off on more discussion of that, so there's a more qualified teacher to address that. So is there anything anybody wanted to add about, thinking about your living with a chronic condition or a health problem, anything I missed? Okay. Oh, yes.
I'll just add one thing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Mm-hmm. Just to add that if you're staying alive for any measurable amount of time, at some point you're going to experience this unless you...
Yes.
And things quickly at a very young age. So that's something that affects all of us at some time or another, mm-hmm. temporarily or long term.
Yes, thank you. Right, so if it's not our current reality... It's coming, right? It's coming. Thank you. What was that? It's in the queue. Oh, Don, did you have? Wait, Don has a comment.
What about, like this, when something bad happens like that, like I remember as a kid some stuff happening and I went, and I was crying to my parents saying like, what did I do to deserve this? Mm. Like, God, what did I do to deserve this?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, it's almost like I felt guilty for having a problem.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah, we look for, what did I do? Like, was it that decision to live there or eat that food? And we can just spin, I think, endlessly in trying to think about what we did for this to come. Yeah. And we're going to get into that a little bit more, explore that a little bit more. So this, like, unpredictability, right, of living with these ups and downs, I thought this metaphor of samsara is like an ocean, right, this ocean of birth and death and, for those of us who think about rebirth, and that cycling, birth, death, rebirth, and this sort of world of suffering and dissatisfaction. And we're kind of like, barely keeping our heads above water at times because the waves are so turbulent, and we can be just tossed this way and that. And so what the Buddha is saying is like, this is it, right? This is the nature, our current nature of existence. And if we don't have like an inner refuge or resources for coping, we're really up and down, happy one day and, filled with despair the next. So what helps us in this? Say, if we stick with the ocean metaphor, what do we wish for? What do we want? Yeah.
calm seas.
Right.
To have some, to kind of smooth that out.
Right. So can we, can our reactions help us calm it, right? So there's less turbulence in there, right? And like classically, the we need a boat, right, or a raft. And so the Dharma, the Buddhist teachings are like that boat that's going to, you know, we're going to embody them. We kind of become the boat so that we can respond to the situations that are happening in our life and get to the other shore, right? The waters become calmer and then we're able to navigate to that other shore. So we become our own refuge. So so this is a list called the Eight Worldly Concerns, or Eight Worldly Winds is another translation I saw, and I thought the thinking of the winds kind of goes along with that. I like metaphors, that ocean metaphor. So these are like the worldly concerns that generally motivate the actions of ordinary beings like us. Well, I mean, I'm an ordinary being. So not all of you perhaps are, but it describes how we habitually respond to the content of our lives, right? So we're continuously swinging from this, like, you know, seeking out and responding to praise and gain and pleasure and fame, so the list on the left, and trying to avoid, or we don't like these experiences of blame, loss, pain, or disgrace. And it's this constant churn of going and trying to either grab onto more of the left column and, you know, sort of trying to protect ourselves from those experiences on the right. And these are set up as kind of opposites. And so I thought maybe we could get into, like, small groups, and I wondered if you'd be interested in responding to this question. I can explain it a little more, like give you an example, like with praise and blame. I think that was, you know, once I got the diagnosis for my son, I really wanted to be, like, this perfect parent and do everything. You know, it was this list of like 30 recommendations. I got on it. You know, here's how we're going to do it. We schedule our week. We're going here and there and everywhere to different types of appointments. And I really sought a lot of praise from the clinicians. You know, I wanted them to view me as, well, you're really working it, Karen. You know, I really envisioned a lot of, you know, great mom. Just really wanted to hear that. So I really tried to impress them. but that's not, of course, always how they reacted to me, right? So some, like, I would create these elaborate charts of, like, here's how I, you know, did what you asked me to do. And they could care less of my little chart that I made, you know? and so then would feel like I wasn't, you know, a good enough mom, or I wasn't doing what needed, you know, what I was supposed to be doing. So that's just kind of one, kind of a health-related example. So if you could kind of keep the health lens, since that's the focus of our topic, even though this is applicable for many, many, all our situations in life, I encourage you to maybe find a couple of people to talk to. And the prompt here is, for those who are streaming, what are the ways these transitory experiences operate in your life related to your illness or a loved one's illness? Okay. So it looks like some really great conversations are happening. I hate to disrupt it, but hopefully it's the start of more conversations. Are there any things that people would like to share? Maybe we could get three or four little juicy nuggets from people. Some insight? Yeah. Go ahead. Oh, the microphone, Donna.
In our group, I think we talked about how much more difficult it is to have some of these undefined conditions like chronic fatigue syndrome, where doctors really don't know what to do about it, and nobody's quite sure whether the patient should be blaming themselves or what they could have done or all this kind of stuff, which is so different from a lot of more straightforward conditions where there's a clearly understood cause, you don't blame yourself for it, stuff like that, which is very different.
Thank you.
And yes, in our group also we were talking about chronic conditions and somebody who had a daughter with different problems and basically mostly mental issues. Someone else who he himself is dealing with those mental issues and he's concerned about his children inheriting this. In my case, my own personal situation is that I was expressing to my friends here that because I have had excellent health all my life and basically have not been sick almost, you know, just only very few times in my life, therefore it is very difficult for me to understand the mental issues and physical issues that my roommate is going through. And so I feel, talking about your diagram over there, a lot of blame for myself because I truly don't think that I'm doing the best. But I encounter myself in a situation where I just do not understand, especially because he has a mental illness. So it's something that I'm battling this every day, and I'm blaming myself for the situation. So basically, that's what we were talking about.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you for sharing that. Oh, we have a hand in the back. Go ahead.
So in my group, I was talking about, or like in our group, that due to chronic illness and pain, the things on the chart have kind of shifted in a weird way for me.
Okay.
So I have kind of an invisible illness, but I use mobility aids, so it's not that invisible. But I'm not diagnosed yet. We know I have a few things, but we don't, you know what's causing everything. And so sometimes if I have that rare moment where I'm not in any pain, I'm like, oh, I've been faking this whole time. Like, I've just been doing this for attention. It's not real. And so I get into this really dark place where I think, like, oh, my gosh, I've wasted my parents' money, and I've, like, been using these resources that could have gone to someone else. And then I get, and then I'm in pain, and I'm like, yes, I'm not faking it. Like, so it was kind of interesting the first time that happened. I never thought that I would associate pain with joy in a weird way. And I think it contributes to easing the pain a little bit.
This is sort of validating.
Yeah.
That experience. Thank you. Was there anything else? Oh, go ahead. We need the mic.
We didn't talk about this much, but it's it occurred to me before we formed a little group that just so I've dealt with substance abuse issues for 10 years, alcohol. I'm sober now, but it's something that it's always on my mind. And so I'm looking for praise. Like, hey, you haven't had a drink for over 3 years. Good for you. Other people look at it like my disease holds them back from parts of their life. And so it's like I want praise for getting to what other people is their baseline, and they sometimes seem to want to bring me back down to, well, your disease caused me pain, and so then I go back into the disgrace mode, and it's just such a complicated, like, back and forth. It's not a cycle, it's a back and forth, and there's a lot wrapped up in that one slide. So.
Yeah. It's not, definitely not a binary, right? It's all like that.
I have a friend. She's a recovering alcoholic. When she made her first year, I was so happy for her. I'm still happy for her. Don't let those people bring you back, because that is a very, very hard journey. When I grew up, my step-grandfather, he was a drunk. And he used to beat on my grandmother. she almost killed him. So where you are today, don't ever look down on yourself. You've done what a lot of people cannot do, whether it's alcohol or whether it's drugs. So you pat yourself on the back every day because you are stronger than you give yourself credit for. Do not let those people bring you down because they are upset that you have gone past where they wish they are. You have done something that is amazing. Don't take that away from yourself. My friend Ashley, she's taught me that. She is my rock. With everything that I've gone through with depression, she understands. Don't take that away from yourself. Never take that away from yourself. If those people want to try to drag you down, you know what? You say, you know what, man? I'm sorry. I'm sorry you haven't gotten here yet. But I'm here if you want to get there. So you pat yourself on the back. Take yourself out for lunch. Go on vacation. Buy yourself a new toy. You have done something incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Every challenge that we face and that we're able to overcome, it's damn near like climbing Mount Everest.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody can feel what you're going through. Nobody knows what drove you to that except for you. But you had the willpower a lot of people do not have or don't have the help or the guidance to get through. So never feel bad. Never go backwards. You have done well. I'm telling you, I don't even know you've done well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because some people, when it comes to alcoholism, I've seen them, they've never changed. And the difference between you and them is because you had the will to want to change. That's the difference. If people want to stay in a hole, those people, you have to let them go. Some people you actually have to love from a distance because they bring you down. They're toxic for you. So like I said, I congratulate you. I think you've done absolutely excellent. Take yourself out for lunch. Go on vacation. Go on a great date with a smoking hot chick. Do something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Take your wife out. That's your smoking hot chick.
Well, she is, but she's the one that I've caused a lot of these this pain to, and that's this isn't AA. That's another.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you both. I mean, it just reminds me of how much courage. Right, take these, we go back to that verse, take these miserable conditions as the path. And that takes incredible courage and perseverance and falling down and getting back up, falling down again and getting back up, right, for when any kind of challenges we're facing. And I think of that, okay, Brené Brown, does anybody know about Brené? Right, she's the shame researcher. She talks about, you know, that vulnerability and courage go together, right? So we, you know, making ourselves vulnerable, like speaking up in a group like this, is part of cultivating that courage and that resilience to keep going. So I really appreciate you both sharing, all of you, what's going on. So what we want to work towards with all these ups and downs is this idea of equanimity, right? So these are rocks, balanced, right? They found their point of balance. So equanimity is this, it's not in detachment or indifference, but it's a steady conscious realization of reality's transience, like this up and down. And evenness of mind, unshakable freedom of mind, inner equipoise. These are all kind of synonyms. I was trying to explain this to my husband, and he doesn't practice, but I, you know, talking to him about my presentation, he's like, oh, so you mean it is what it is? And, you know, that I thought, well, yeah, I mean, that expression is so overused, but that, yeah, that things are what they are. I have one quote from Pema Chodron, who's another Buddhist nun who's impacted me a lot through her books. She writes, To cultivate equanimity, we practice catching ourselves when we feel attraction or aversion before it hardens into grasping or negativity. And so I really like that idea of catching ourselves. And so I have, maybe I won't go through all of these, but these are kind of mindfulness practices that you can use in the moment to catch yourself. When you start spinning, you know, you start thinking about how your condition could be worsening or how you're impacting others in a negative way. These are to kind of like notice that you feel that arising and then how can you sort of stop it and look at it. And I got these, they're particularly mentioned in this book, which is in our bookstore. So it's How to Be Sick from Tony Bernhard. And if was that shameless plug? Yeah. Well, I saw it there, and it was a perfect match for this. And so she lives with many decades of illness, and so and is a Buddhist practitioner, so she really goes in depth. And so the first one is weather practice, and that's just what she calls it. I mean, we may know it without calling it that. The idea is to sort of use the metaphor of the weather. Right, we had this, the weather's always changing. We had that oppressive heat for the last, you know, is that like 10 days of that? It felt like it wasn't going to break, and then, you know what? It changed, right? So then we got some nice pleasant weather and some rain. And so we can think about our, you know, the fleeting nature of our experiences, that our thoughts and emotions are always changing. So even though they feel like they're going to be with us, they're so intense, they might feel like, you know, they're always going to be there. You know, inevitably they will change. And so this is the first kind of, you know, if you can tap into that, oh, wait, maybe I need to use the weather practice in this moment and look at your thoughts and just kind of notice them and maybe they'll move on. And so I thought we could use an example, sort of a health-related example to understand these practices a little better. And this is, like, this week I went to just an annual checkup at the dermatologist. And, you know, I don't know if you have this experience. You, like, walk in, you get this form, the clipboard with the pen hanging on, and you get this tiny font. And so it's really small. If you can't see it in the back, you got to fill out your medical history, surgical history, skin disease history, right? So I'm sitting in the waiting room, and I'm like starting to feel stuff is rising as I'm having to circle. I got this now. I got this. I don't have that, but my mom has that. You know, this anxiety is starting to bubble up. Is this, right? It's always a simple form, right? So the weather practice would be like, okay, I start to notice I'm having a reaction here. I'm just filling out a form. But starting, maybe it's fear, right? Because my mom had breast cancer. It's on the list. So that, you know, triggers that. And so weather practice is just kind of, oh, okay, I feel that. And then it's going to, you know, I can let it go. Does that make sense? Okay. And so the second one is another mindfulness practice, describing your present moment experience objectively, right? So leaving out the emotionally charged descriptors like horrible, miserable, unbearable, unending, which can contribute to like us really concretizing that experience, like it's never going to change. And it is definitely is the truth, right? So in this kind of practice can get us out of when we're really ruminating about the what ifs or the what could have beens, and just stressful thoughts. So we ask ourselves, like, what is actually happening right now? What is true in this moment? And not thinking about like ultimate truth, but just sort of a ordinary truth, right? And so if we go back to the example of the waiting room, oops, wrong way. Oh no, that one. What was happening in that moment? Really? Right, I'm sitting there, right? A person sitting in a chair or sitting in the waiting room filling out a form, right? That's the sort of the rawness of it, right? But I was going into, like, I'm going to get breast cancer. That's where I was going. But, you know, just catching myself, wait, you know what, really, that's all that's happening, right? So, I mean, I don't know if anybody can think of another example of just describing, maybe think back to a difficult moment where your thoughts were just really spinning off. And, you know, what was really true in that moment? Mm. So an accident?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you're making a left-hand turn, you have to yield the right away. So he was like, when he got out the car, he was just cursing. He was like, he wasn't cursing at her, but he was cursing. I was just like, okay. I remember when I got into my car accident, and I called my insurance company while the cop was still there. I wasn't screaming, cursing, or doing anything. I was just like, look, I'm all right. She's all right. Let's just go ahead and get this paperwork started. It's just been a stressful day for everybody. I just want to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much it. Like, cursing at somebody, it's just going to make me more stressed out. I don't have the mental capacity for it right now. So can we just do what we got to do and just go home?
Right.
Everybody can leave here with their vehicles. We just need to get an assessment and let's just be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
But getting into a car accident is another one of those examples because some people like literally fly off the handle with stuff like that.
But just staying, you know, this is what's happened.
Okay. It happened.
That we're going to be in that until we need to move on to what's next.
Right. That's it.
Yeah. Thank you. So it could be some, Donna, did you have one? Okay. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say when I have sleep issues, sometimes when you get up after a rough night and you're awake and it will change, but that's something that happens, you know, in the mornings, okay, starting my day, whether it was a good night or bad night, you just try not to let that affect you moving forward.
Right. So it would be, you know, person getting up in the morning, right? It's not all that extra stuff of, oh no, you know, now I'm going to be exhausted for the day. It's, you know, person waking up.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about an example as to what you were experiencing with when you were filling out your questionnaire.
Yeah.
Because I have not experienced pain often in my life, and this health up to this moment has been very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's also to sometimes the curse. And because if I feel that, for example, for the first time in my life, just a few days ago, I went to sleep and I was not rested. So next day, same thing happened. Then I'm thinking, and then the third day, and I'm thinking, oh my God, why is it that I feel tired? Is it because there is a hidden situation happening in my body that I don't know what it is? And if it is, what is it that I'm going to do about it? Oh, my goodness, for heaven's sake, I'm tired. Why is it that I'm tired? I mean, I kept on thinking about this thing. Nothing was happening.
Right.
Maybe just only was accumulated, that I couldn't rest well for 3 nights.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to make a big deal out of something that hasn't happened.
That's right.
You're already creating
a
story. You know, I was already creating a story of possible cancer here.
Right.
Come on. It's
yeah,
just, you know,
that's exactly what we're getting at, right?
Exactly.
That's
so
exactly
that's when
it.
I said, hello.
Right. What's happening here? Right.
You know, nothing has happened yet. So I think that with other things, this is just a tiny thing, but with people who have other situations or in other situations, I personally shouldn't make a big deal out of something.
Mm-hmm.
And just catch us doing that, which is important, so that we don't continue doing it.
Right, that's the idea of the, like, catching ourselves.
Yes, just
thank you.
Even an example of that.
Thank you. Oh, we got one more.
Very quickly, I've been having a lot of health issues that take a long time to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And what really helps me is to say, this is horrible right now, but you had that last year and that the year before, and those healed.
Mm-hmm.
So this will heal too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just go through it.
Thank you. Thank you. And I have more about that kind of self-talk, how we, you know, really, we'll get to that. Maybe we'll move on. What, Don, did you have one more comment?
Yeah, I was just thinking that, you know, thinking back about the eight worldly concerns or eight things that you were talking about, when, you know, we're all, you know, to use the terms of some Buddhist saint that I met one time, he said, we're all addicted to deliciousness, which is another way, when you're sitting in the doctor's office, of saying, hey, I want to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be young. I want to be healthy.
Right.
I want to be happy.
Yeah.
And that's not, it's more like I want these things. We want perfect health. And then you're having, you're filling out a form that is saying, hey, I could, I've got these things,
mm-hmm.
and I could have these things. And immediately there's aversion, because what we want is perfection.
Right.
So the attachment to the good stuff creates an aversion to the negative stuff, which it makes us suffer.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to, you know, again, the antidote, one of the antidotes, attachment. Attachment is just letting go and kind of, okay, that happened or that could happen. By the way, I was just thinking too, looking back at the disease, like I have one of my daughters suffers from some anxiety type issues and things like that, and oftentimes I'll talk to her as if she shouldn't have it, like I'm attached to her being healthy and not being depressed and not being stressed and all of that, and I'll even in my speaking, I'll put my trip on her, which creates more suffering for her because then she thinks she should be happy and healthy and all of this, but then she looks at the reality and that's not how she feels. So it creates suffering. So my attachment to her being well creates suffering for both of us, and letting go of that clinging, me wanting her to be perfectly healthy all the time and happy all the time, and not putting that trip on her, but saying, hey, however you are, just, it's okay. And it's okay. It will change. It's okay. Not. So anyway, I just noticed that clinging to perfection creates a lot of suffering when we don't experience it, which is a lot of the time.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
I could say more, but I'm going to, from my own experience too, of once I had more acceptance of my, you know, my child's situation, what was really happening, then it opened up the world for us, right, in our relationship, so we could have a more authentic relationship once I kind of let go. So it's very, very profound experience for sure.
But I think it's a situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you, the gentleman is saying that he's concerned that he's bringing his want, this his need of having his daughter good, that he's putting a trip on her, so to speak. But on the other hand, what is he going to do? Okay, honey, keep on being depressed for the rest, you know, or
right.
In other words, there is a fine line where. Mm-hmm. There is that attachment he was talking about, but the other one is going the other way, where it's okay, you can feel this, but it's not okay. But it's not okay.
We
to
need
feel
to take
that way.
Take steps to.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's not okay.
Right.
It's like saying somebody who is an addict saying, "Well, you know, you feel like this today. It's okay. Well, but it's okay for today. You know, not forever."
Mm-hmm. So there's a fine line.
Oh, here, Don's going to have a response. Yeah.
So I wanted to make a distinction between aspiration and clinging. Like, I can aspire for my daughter to be healthy and to be well without being, you know, without that grasping, clinging mind that she's got to be well, she's got to be healthy, because that's where the suffering comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So I aspire that she be that way, and I'm going to do everything I can to help her be that way, but I don't have to suffer because I'm clinging to her being perfectly healthy.
Thank you. Thanks for that clarification. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, we got lots of hands.
Sorry.
I think we're hitting something here.
My daughter has something that can't be seen right now.
Mm-hmm.
And she has reminded me to be accepting.
Mm.
And things like, don't you think I want to be well?
Mm.
So I think before I say anything.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, we had a hand in the back. Miranda?
So I have struggled more with myself being attached to me being healthy, because I've been fortunate that those around me are very, very accepting and will, you know, accommodate me and do everything they can to help. But I don't do that for myself often, and I'm working on. But when I first started having this issue, I would just ignore it, and I was like, yeah, I'm a healthy, normal person. Sometimes I'm just in crippling pain and can't walk. It's all good, like everything's fine. And I would continue going to classes when I couldn't and get fatigue and just, like, it was rough.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to use a mobility aid. I was like, I don't want to use a cane. Like, I'm a healthy person. I just have this one thing that happens sometimes, you know. And once I started accepting it, and I was like, okay, I can, like, if I just accept this, I can also, and I just don't be embarrassed about using these aids because I know that people are really accepting, then my quality of life improved a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So something that I feel like is often overlooked is the person themselves being accepting to themselves.
Mm. And that's like a beautiful segue to tapping in the healing, into the healing power of compassion, right? And so that compassion and kindness and love towards yourself is so important. And you just very eloquently provided an example of that. Because the last time I taught here at the Kadampa Center for a Sunday, my topic was self-compassion. And so that's another issue here of, like, we can be so harsh with ourselves and so judgmental in talking to ourselves the way we would never talk to anybody else, right? We can be incredibly hard on ourselves. And blame ourselves, you know, for the illness or failures, like it's a failure of character or, you know, we didn't put enough effort into it. But it's really important to begin to make friends with ourselves and use kind words when we talk to ourselves. And so we might be, you know, I don't want to be sick, or I hate this physical discomfort. But Tony Bernhardt shares a really great, at least I thought it was a very effective turnaround, a different way we can consider ourselves. So I'll just read this to you. Whether sick or well, may this body be a vehicle for liberation. Right? May this body, this whatever's happening with it, this is the vehicle for liberation. Right? You can work with it. Or sick though it is, may this body be a vehicle for generating compassion. Right? We have these available to us in this, whatever we've got, right? And so, again, going back to that idea of, like, we take everything on the path, right? Nothing's wasted. We can use the experience. So another tip that I got from a senior practitioner about being kind to yourself is that they created a don't stress checklist. So they created the don't stress checklist in a moment when they were feeling well. And these are like the wise self giving the future self some advice. Okay? So you're nodding. I see that. That makes sense. And so this person said they just pull the list out when they need it. So maybe by the bedside or by a chair. And so some of the things are, you know, I can handle more than I think. Right? I can handle more than I think. the word forbear, or I'm purifying. We haven't talked at all about how illness is purification. That may be a different day we talk about that. But that's another thing, like reflecting on that. Lighten up, loosen up. So just these gentle things could be on your don't stress checklist. And so finally, this is about a 10-minute meditation, so I'm not sure if I should launch into it. What do you? Is that? Are y'all feeling? Well, it's 11:45. I got time. Do y'all have time? You're good. Okay. So I just wanted to introduce to you the Tonglen meditation. And feel free if you need to step out. No trouble. And so this will be kind of our last thing that we address today. It's sort of your last tool in your toolkit for turning the adversity of illness into the path. And I adapted this meditation from Kathleen McDonald's book, How to Meditate, also in the bookstore. Is it? Yeah, okay. And so Tonglen is a very transformative and healing practice. The Tonglen is a Tibetan word for giving and taking. So we're going to be using our breath. We're giving towards ourselves and others, and then taking on. And so we can develop love and compassion through this. And it's considered a thought transformation or like a mind training technique. And so this can help us tremendously if our goal is to become enlightened ourselves and making our lives as beneficial as possible. And when I talked with, got some advice about this, it's a really a flexible practice. So we'll do it now in a more formal way, but it's something you can take on the road, and like if you're in the waiting room, you can use it. If you're standing in line, you can use it, and just using your breath to relieve the suffering of yourself or others, and sending out all the good stuff. Okay? So we're going to imagine taking on our own suffering and the suffering of others and giving them our happiness. And just to be clear, it's sort of conjoined with the breath. The inhale, you're sort of bringing in the suffering of others, and exhaling is you're sending out the happiness and goodness, what other people need. And it can be, it's another courageous thing to do, right? To think about, wow, can I really bring on that? Can I really work with other people's difficulties? And so just take it easy. You can start with just your own suffering, you know, your past, your current, and your future suffering. Okay. So just get comfortable, and your eyes can be open or closed, whatever is suitable for you. And just settle in for a little bit. It'll be about 7 or 8 minutes. And so we'll generate a positive motivation for doing this meditation to increase our feelings of compassion, love, our desire to help others, so that our lives and all things that we do will be beneficial and never harmful to others. So we'll think for a few moments about how all beings want to be happy, that we all have these basic needs for food, shelter, feeling comfortable, safe, and loved, and that we all wish for things like friends, family, material possessions, good health, satisfying work. And we all beings also wish to be free of every kind of pain and problem. So recognize that everything you do is motivated by the wish to be happy and to avoid problems. And the same is true for all other beings. And there's nothing wrong with this. We all deserve to be happy and free from pain. So then ask yourself, if we're all the same in wanting to be peaceful, happy and satisfied, and not wanting to experience any happiness, pain, or problems, is it right for me to care only for my own happiness and my problems? So think for a moment about the result of this self-centered attitude. Does it really bring the happiness you seek and prevent the problems you don't want? If you wish to be less focused on yourself and more loving and caring to others, it's possible to transform your mind in this way. And one method is Tonglen. So bring to mind a problem that is currently troubling you. You know, maybe not the biggest one, but a small one or a medium-sized one. It could be something physical, emotional, or interpersonal. And let this problem arise in your mind and the associated feelings with it and how your mind wants to push it away. Then think, I'm not the only person in the world experiencing a problem like this. There are many others. Think of others you have met or read about, maybe someone here today, you heard their story, some of whom are experiencing a greater degree of this problem than you. Generate compassion for them, thinking and really feeling how wonderful it would be if all those people could be free from their suffering. And then decide that you will accept or take on your own experience of this problem, and if you're comfortable, the suffering of others with the same problem, with the compassionate wish that by doing so, you and all other people will be free from suffering. And imagine this suffering as a thick, dark smoke floating out of their body. As you inhale, imagine taking this dark smoke of suffering into yourself. It's not harmful to you, but comes to your heart and disintegrates the knot of delusion and self-centeredness, anger, attachment, and jealousy. And as you continue to inhale, breathing gently, the knot is totally destroyed. This knot and the suffering, your own and that of the others, becomes totally non-existent. And feel a sense of joy that the other people are now free from their suffering and problems. So now, draw your attention to your exhalation. And when you exhale, imagine breathing out your happiness, your positive qualities, and your merit in the form of bright light. Imagine that it transforms into whatever will bring joy and peace of mind to yourself and to those you have been thinking about. Could be wellness, health, material things, love and friendship, inner qualities like patience, compassion, courage, equanimity. Imagine that their needs and wishes are fulfilled. Their mind is filled with peace, happiness, and all the knowledge and qualities of the spiritual path. Let your mind rest for a moment in a feeling of joyfulness that you have been able to help in this way. And finally, in closing, dedicate the positive energy of doing this meditation for the happiness and enlightenment of all beings. So you can slowly bring your awareness back to the room. And I think we're going to call it we're going to wrap it up. Thank you. Thank you. That was a great discussion.
Okay, so we'll do our regular Sunday morning dedication prayers. If you'll turn to page 246 in the Gold Prayer Book, and we'll read Master Shanti Deva's dedication verses. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. And then flip to the previous pages, 244 and 245, and we'll say the short long life prayers for His Holiness the Dalai Lama, for Gyume Khyentse Rinpoche, and for Lama Zopa Rinpoche in that order. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatari, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And now seven Green Tower mantras for the long, happy, healthy lives of our precious Geshe's, Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sangpo. Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re Soha. 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 Thank you. And of course, we can't let you go without a couple of announcements. I'll let Elise go first.
Hi, I'm Elise from Outreach, and just want to remind you that in 2 weeks, on Saturday, June the 15th, we have our interfaith work day for Habitat for Humanity. It's not too late to sign up. Just give me an email and I'll shoot you the details. And then we're doing collections through this month of June and July May and June for the food collection. We're collecting food because during the summer especially, it's a really difficult time for families. So please remember to bring your food here to the lobby and we'll deliver it for you. Also in the month June and July, we're going to be collecting used eyeglasses for a free health care day that's going to be held this in September. So if you have any old prescription eyeglasses, please bring them. They will be repurposed for someone who cannot afford eyeglasses, and it's really a miracle for some people. So remember to do that, please. One other thing I just want to mention, it's an interfaith initiative. On Tuesday, June the 11th, there's going to be a presentation about faith, science, and climate solutions. And it's a presentation that's going to be a presentation from Interfaith Power Light and the Union of Concerned Scientists. So I'm just going to put this flyer on the back wall, near the back door if you're interested. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, go, Donna. Uh-huh. Oh. Okay. So if you couldn't hear Karen, we have Sakadawa coming up. It's a Buddha holy day that's on, well, we're in the whole month of Sakadawa starting in a couple of days. But on June 17th, Venerable Lamo is going to lead an animal blessing and liberation. And that's a very powerful practice. Yeah. It's a great practice of compassion and other things, and for healing. If you are new to the center and would like an orientation, Robbie Watkins, our esteemed director, will lead a quick newcomer Q&A session right after the teachings at the front of the Gompa. And then I have some logistical requests and then exciting announcements. So logistically, we need someone to volunteer to take down the water offering bowls, and also we brought in 8 comfy armchairs, and if 8 people could take those back out into the lobby and bring the chairs that are out there. These ones with the wooden arms go right inside the door, and the gray ones with the kind of curved arms go around the conference table. That'll be very helpful. And then we also want to let you know that beginning also on Sakadawa, 2 weeks from tomorrow, we're going to have a 1-week visit from Venerable Robina Curtin. It's been a couple of years since we've had her here. She is really quite a powerhouse. She's not like any other teacher you'll encounter in Tibetan Buddhism. And she's going to be teaching. I can't believe she's got this energy. This woman never stops, and she's teaching every single night, plus a weekend workshop while she's here. If you have not experienced Venerable Robina, I really suggest you make some room in your calendar to come at least for one night, because she'll turn everything you think you know on its head. But at the same time, keep you straight. So please do come, just to also help you keep in mind that we're able to bring her, as we are able to do everything that we do here, only thanks to donations from our channel sponsors. And I think Joe might have more to say about that, or somebody has more to say. Who? And then you can go.
Thank you. So Robina is this no-nonsense, strong personality that kind of cuts through all the nonsense and gets you clear real fast. So please try to keep her in mind when you are making your plans. Sponsorship starts at $108, but any contribution is welcomed. We are able to bring teachers into the center because of the contributions that we as a center make to bring them here, and that opportunity is priceless that we have this kind of teaching here. And it's at home. You can, you know, just go back home and come in and go as you need. If you have any financial questions, please talk to Jill, which is our center manager right there. And if you have any questions about the spiritual, about the program in and of itself, this is your girl. What else we got? I think that's it. You really did it all, lady. It's okay. It's cool. But one last little thing. This is a tiny little thing. We have social groups here that kind of are divided into groups like outdoors and movies and games. And our outdoor fitness group is meeting after next Sunday's teachings at 12:30 to head over to Umstead Park with water guns and anything you like to bring to hike together with children, without children. It's just a nice way to get together and enjoy each other. So that's it.
And you should come next Sunday because Geshe Sangpo will be here. So that's two reasons to come. Okay. Thank you all. Thank you. This was a great discussion. Thanks, Karen.